All right, so you're listening to this podcast right now, London is Blue, and guess what? We host our podcast on anchor.fm. That's right. If you're looking to host your own podcast, this is the easiest free way to get started. It's got a content creation tool, allows you to record and the podcast right from a phone. That's right. Don't even need a computer, but you can do it there too. They'll also help you distribute it, which is probably the most challenging part. You don't want to have to mess with that. They got you covered. You can get it right on a Spotify and Apple Podcasts, as well as any other place podcasts are found. And you know what? You can monetize it too. Make a little cash for sharing your great content with the world. It's everything you need to make a podcast all in one individual place. So you know what? Head over to your app store, download the Anchor app, or head to anchor.fm to get started if you're ready to launch your podcast and make it happen.
Hi, this is Ruben Loftus-Cheek.
This is William.
I'm Mason Mount. You're listening to the London is Blue podcast.
All right, welcome back, Chelsea fans, to another episode of the London is Blue podcast. Coming at you, as always, myself, Brandon, Nick, and Dan are here, but it's not just an ordinary London is Blue podcast episode. That's right, we have a guest, Clayton Bierman, wildly good friends. You are so nice to us, Clayton, every time we come over. You even hooked Dan up with tickets back in the day. I mean, we go way back, and it's good to have you back, man.
Absolutely great to be back, and I believe I should be saying yo yo yo. Is that right?
Yo yo yo. Yeah.
No, it's great. It's great to be back. It was great to see you guys when you were back over a couple of months ago. Sorry we didn't have more time together, but still nice to see you, even fleetingly.
Always a pleasure. It's good to now have two goalkeeper union votes in the podcast. Non goalkeeper union votes. Boy. So we'll see how that goes. Nick, let's set the scene for everyone. What is the theme after yesterday's match against Watford?
Well, as you know, we've been doing these themes, and trying to come up with something that's clever about Watford is tougher than I anticipated. So I went with VAR or VAR. Wat a shambles. Wat.
Not like a buzzkill.
Yeah, ooh, poor Harry the Hornet.
That's a good one too. I like that.
I'm sure he gets a lot of stick. There's not a lot of Premier League mascots, are there, Clayton?
No, we've got one, haven't we?
We have two.
I'm just trying to think.
You have Gunnarsaurus.
That's very true. I don't know whether they actually have a life size cock at Tottenham. They may do. I go to so few away games now. I can't tell you.
Neither can confirm nor deny if there's
the,
a life
the existence
size
of a large cock at Tottenham. That is great.
That should have been the theme. That should have been the theme of the show.
We'll get away from the trophy envy.
All right, off to a great start. So following that up, today we are going to talk about Chelsea's fifth consecutive Premier League win in a row on the back of another massive midfield performance. The attacking contributions that saw us pass the Hornets, yes, including that pass. And then we'll wrap it up with some key efforts in defense that prevented a late capitulation despite chaos agent Mike Dean's best efforts. Dan, some very quick shout outs to some lovely people that have left iTunes or I guess Apple Podcast reviews.
Yeah, we got to make sure we're just on brand with their rebranding. But yes, Apple Podcast reviews, some 5-star love from Nani, Bylon Watts, Hunt W27, Tom Rivers, Blues, SC76, and AJ. S. Courage, all leaving 5-star reviews for us on Apple Podcasts. We appreciate it. Thank you so much. Helps us connect us with other listeners. So if you'd like a shout out beginning of next episode, which will be the midweek match, then get it in now. Do it while you're listening.
All right. And Nick, goodies for the listeners, the rewards for hanging out with us. What do they get?
Just rewards indeed. Our Christian Pulisic kit giveaway contest thing that we're doing via Anchor is going to end on Tuesday. Look at that bad boy. Yeah. Ooh, if you're watching the YouTube video, you got a really good view of that. So all you have to do is go to our Anchor profile, leave us a voice message. You can do it on your phone. It's super easy. We're hopefully going to take all these, compile them, send them to the club. Hopefully give him some love from the States. From our previous contest, Matt Burks, you are running out of time to claim your jersey. So if you don't by Tuesday or Wednesday, I think I said, then you are out and someone else is going to be in. So get a hold of us, contact at londonisbluepodcast.com, DM us or whatever. You know that Black Friday is coming up, so 10% off at World Soccer Shop is code LONDONPOD. That will just, whatever, for your order, free customization, free shipping. and then Talisman Caps London Blue 10 for the promo code of that's 10% off $35 or more. So all that being said, we have more shit coming. It's just going to be a couple of weeks.
Super excited to see what new shit we have coming.
Sounds
great. Awesome. All right, well, let's go ahead and jump into the match review. It was the Watford match up at Vicarage Road, home of one Lee Parker, in case you don't know.
Indeed.
Let's see. Watford 1, Chelsea 2. So the goals, in case you missed it, we can throw in a little context here. Tammy Abraham, fifth minute. Probably a little surprised that he got the ball in the position he did, but did well to regain composure and knock it right over the keeper. Fifth minute.
He could be in here. He is in, and he scored. Of course he has.
What a ball this is. Tammy's alive to it. It's about a bit of composure. Can you start at home? Yes, you can.
The next one we have is Christian Pulisic, Captain America. 55 minutes gone. Slides in, buries it.
Tammy Abraham onside, tapping. There's your cushion.
There you go. Slightly fortuitous with the ball that finds it to Tammy. But Pulisic makes that run. It's a brilliant cross. It's a great finish.
And then get a little bit interesting. 80 minutes after a lengthy VAR review. De La Feo doing his best acting job, making the most of it. Buries his penalty 2-1. And that's how it ends. But definitely some late game kind of nerves as we saw it. So, Opta Joe tweeting 7. Frank Lampard is only the second manager in Chelsea FC's history to win 7 consecutive away games in all competitions after Bobby Campbell in 1989. Icon. Clayton, not to try to date you, I have no reference to what Chelsea was like back then. I was 2. Do you have any context at this point?
I'd like to say no, of course not. I'm much too young, but obviously I think I must have been in my late 50s during that period.
Oh no.
So this was a very, very good season, although we were in the tier below, which was what is now the Championship. We were in Division 2. We got relegated with a team that should never, ever have got relegated. This was a really good team. And we went down and just really shouldn't have gone down. And then we were probably too good for that division. But that particular spell, I think I'm right in saying that... I'm probably going to get this wrong, but I think that was possibly when we signed Mickey Thomas at Christmas in that year. And I think we went unbeaten for the rest of that season. I can't remember whether we scored 100 goals or we got 100 points, but we ended up in the 90s. We were very, very good in the context of what we were doing, what we were playing, and we won the old Championship. So I'm not surprised we won all those games in a row. I would imagine that I was at quite a few of them, but obviously with old age settling in, I can't actually remember any of them.
Well, that would have been the time, because this was February through April. So if they made some key Christmas signings, that would have done it.
Yeah, they did. I'm sure Mickey Thomas was one of them, and I think they might have signed Dave Besant as well. I remember one game. I don't actually think it was in February. I think it might have actually been in January. We played away at Derby, and the reason I remember that was because it was so cold. Obviously not cold Minnesota or anywhere where you guys live, but cold. And we won 2-1. Funnily enough, I think we let a goal in right near the end of that game as well. Things never change. So that was a decent team. It was a good watch, but that's what our expectations were then.
Awesome. Dan, go ahead and run us through the lineup, and then we can get into the in-depth stuff here. I would like to point out that Watford lined up in a 5-3-2, probably much more of a 5-4-1, the good old Christmas tree formation here. But what about Chelsea? What'd they do?
Yeah, not Christmas tree for Chelsea. We saw Kepa, Aretha Blog on goal, Azpilicueta, Zuma, Tomori, and Emerson returning from his injury. Jorginho and Kovacic both in the midfield. We saw Willian, Mount, and Pulisic behind Tammy Abraham up top. Alonso, Caballero, Giroud, Billy Gilmore on new substitutes. And we saw appearances from Callum Hudson-Odoi, Mishi Batshuayi, and Reece James in this match, Nick.
Indeed. Reece James, the new Mikel, the closer.
Was it just me, or did Emerson surprise anyone else? Like, we didn't hear anything. All of a sudden, he just popped in like it was normal.
And played, like, to me, he played really well. I mean, he did not look like he had been out for a period of 5 weeks. I don't know. I was pretty shocked, and I think it was... This is hopefully the scenario now, Clayton, where we start to get some of these key pieces back from injury, and hopefully there's some decent squad rotation where you're not dropping complete levels to bring someone in.
Yeah, no, it was good to see him back. I mean, especially after Marcus's Halloween horror show during the week, he really had a poor game, and I don't blame him because I think he was out on his feet, and I think he was very tired. And he didn't play very well, so it was really good to see Emerson back. It's very interesting because, I mean, Rudiger apparently declared himself fit before the press conference on Friday, and Frank then said, no, you're not. So he must be close, and Kante's close. And the big question is, Dan, if you want to answer this, where are they all going to slot in? Because, you know, you look at that midfield yesterday, where's Kante going to play?
Yeah, Dan.
Yeah, Dan. Yeah,
I really have all the answers. I've been, you know, just dialing up Frank every couple days. We talk about it. We strategize on the 11 together. Really glad he's taking my advice, keeping Mason Mount in the lineup. And, you know, ultimately, it's going to be tough to figure out who is the person who cedes the position. It's probably, you know, you could go to a back three and then push up with the wingbacks if you wanted to. And I'm at a loss. I don't know who you drop. You know, I think maybe you give rotation. I mean, maybe you give Kovacic a little break. Maybe you give Jorginho a break at times, because those guys are just continuing to run and run and run. And I'm worried about their potential fatigue situation too.
Jorginho gave himself a break next week. We'll talk about that.
Very obviously. Smart. Very intelligent of him.
But I think Clayton's point about Rudiger and the injury situation is super interesting, because while he's declared himself fit after hurting his groin, after hurting his knee, Frank went out and said that he's the farthest of, you know, outside of Ruben, who obviously has a ways to come back, but like there's something going on there that's really interesting. And I hope it's, you know, Rudiger being hungry and wanting to get back sooner than maybe you should, and not that there's some conflicting agent manager BS happening, because that would be not good for this locker room.
Yeah, I would like to think not. You know, Rudiger, he's upset when he's not on the field. I mean, he's that like ultimate competitor that if he's not on the field, he's not happy. He's had the ACL. He's been out for a long time. I'm sure having another long-term injury is just making him more antsy than probably a different situation. But again, at least you're right. I hope not. I feel like this is just a very competitive player being very competitive and wanting to be back in the field, especially with Chelsea doing so well. Like, you want to be a part of that run. I think, again, that's where I'm hoping he's coming from. But some top level stats real quick. Chelsea was 16 shots, 10 on target. Watford, 12 shots, but only 3 on target this time. We had 67% possession, over doubling their passes, 89% accuracy for us out of 787. We had 2 yellow cards. They had 4. And we had our 6 corner kicks. Obviously, with all of those, it would tell you that Chelsea pretty much ran the show. I would be a little annoyed that we gave up 12 shots, though, off of 33% possession. We can get into that in a little bit. And then lastly, at Kaylee_graphics, crushing it again with their XG map for this match. Watford, 0.5, plus 1 with the penalty. Chelsea, 2.0. So we nailed it, spot on. We'll have to, obviously, after breaking the model recently, we've now let Watford in with a freebie on the penalty. So, first talking point, Chelsea, fifth Premier League in a row. Win sees us cruising right now. And a huge part of that is obviously our midfield. Clayton, Mateo Kovacic is really starting to find his form, find his rhythm. I don't know if it's the whole, hey, you need a year to adapt the Premier League. If so, he's coming good. Against Watford, he had 154 touches, won 100% of his duels, which is 7 of 7. He won all 3 of his tackles. He had 140 passes attempted. and he had 100% of his take-ons. Four take-ons. I'm not saying he's Eden Hazard, but those four is a ton in the Premier League. And then he had a 96% accuracy on those 140 passes. So there's the stat level. What about you in the eye test? What are you making of Mateo Kovacic against Watford and maybe bigger picture this season?
I thought he was outstanding yesterday. Bigger picture, he's class. And I think the whole settling in thing, it's quite interesting because I don't think that he needs a season to settle in. I just basically think that our previous manager had a different role for him and along with other players in the team put him in a straitjacket where he couldn't actually do what he's good at doing. I always hark back, and apologies if I'm boring anybody that's heard me say this before, but I hark back to when he made his debut. I don't know if you remember, it was last season, home against Arsenal, second home game. He and Eden Hazard came on together. And basically, they were quite similar in stature and appearance and both bearded. And you couldn't actually tell the difference between them. And it wasn't only physical. It was the fact that the way they played their football and they controlled the ball. And I thought, crikey, this guy is really, really skillful. And he is an incredibly skillful player. And I just think he was used in the wrong way last year. I know that some people raised their eyebrows when we were going to buy him. And I thought, no, this is a really, really good player. I mean, he played, you know, Real Madrid bought him, which I know is not the ultimate test in being brilliant, but he's a really good player and he's just proving it. He's just basically playing, you know, he's being managed by what was one of the best midfield players of his generation who understands how he can be used and he's just let him get on with it. And the relationship with Kovacic is with Jorginho is fantastic. And I'm not surprised. I'm really not surprised. I can understand why people are surprised, but I'm not. He's always had that in his locker. And he's now absolutely blossoming. It's fantastic. I think if the man could score, he would just be one of the best in the world.
Well, it'd be a dream. It'd be like a cheat code, having a midfielder who can put up those kind of numbers and also, you know, like you said, just score as well. But he's so smooth on the ball. Nick, I mean, his heat map is he dominated the entire middle 60 yards on the left side of the pitch. And, you know, I think what's funny is when you add the off-the-field context to Kovacic and the things we heard that he's like dresses like a dad, like he's very just straightforward. You know, he's not a flashy guy. He's actually really boring is what they say, whatever. But when he gets on the pitch, right, he's this whole different person. He's got swagger. Like he's got confidence right now. I don't know. It's just been, I mean, like you said, an unsung hero, I think, is the best way you've kind of been able to describe him recently.
We got to get him one of these mustaches so he can complete the look.
Can't buy that.
No one needs any more of those, Nick.
I don't know, man. I'm feeling it. What's funny, if you look at his heat map, it kind of has the resemblance of like a short shark. And I think that's kind of who he is. Like,
wow.
I think yesterday and you know, outside of the cup game, which was just an overall bad performance from our team, and we already talked about that, I think he has been so consistent, and yesterday was taking the absolute piss out of Watford's whole team. There's that like famous clip now where him and Jorginho are basically just pinging the ball to each other right outside of our box and with no care in the world. Like they know what they're gonna go do and everybody else is just kind of chasing shadows. And I think the take on piece, Dan, is probably the most interesting point about his game to me, because what that does is it's not like Jorginho where, you know, he has to kind of, see where a player's running and put the ball exactly there. He can kind of create his own luck. And when you have a guy who can take someone on and move the ball, move the entire team up the field with him, I think that's pretty special. And that's the thing that kind of breaks down some of these block defending teams when they have to step out and get uncomfortable and go chase a player a little bit. So You might touch on that with your point, but I was just really impressed with him yesterday.
Unlike Jorginho, who probably is not going to complain to FIFA about the pace rating on his card because it's very accurate, Kovacic is capable of getting up to speed quicker and making those lanes available to himself in a way that Jorginho isn't in terms of forward ball movement. And I think what also happens is because we have a couple players, Mount, Pulisic, Abraham, who are drawing some attention away, there were some points when he was carrying that ball forward and he had space around him. He didn't necessarily have to go find a one-on-one to make the moment happen. But when he does, he's very capable of being shifty. I don't know how the ink blotting of a baby shark here is how you read the heat map, but that's very interesting. I just think he has kind of been the individual and a little bit of the shadow because Jorginho has had some really strong performances and I think taken a lot of the limelight, but Kovacic is doing some work in the trenches there to just keep possession, and with possession you can go score, Brandon. And so not giving the ball away is one of the best things that we could be doing, and Kovacic is really damn good at that.
Sure is looking like it. But then it gets even better when you pair him with Jorginho this season. Mateo, again from Squawk of Football, tweeting, Mateo Kovacic had 11.7% possession on his own. Jorginho had 10.5% possession. Combined, 22.2% possession against Watford. The entire Watford team had 33.3% possession. So that's how impactful those guys were. And again, Jorginho, 138 touches, 125 passes, 96% accuracy, 11 recoveries, 4 interceptions, 2 chances created, an assist. Man, we will talk about an assist. But now you start to see a little difference, right? So like Jorginho had 11 recoveries, Kovacic had 11 recoveries. Jorginho has more interceptions. You're almost starting to see a little bit, it seems like, Clayton, that Jorginho will sit a little deeper and let Kovacic go and kind of jumpstart the counterattacks. Either way, these two are building a super strong bond. You talk about fitting Conte and Ruben Loftus-Cheek in this lineup. These guys are making it really hard for Frank to ever want to break them up as a duo.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's quite interesting because Jorginho is... he's basically taking the role that Kante had in Conte's Premier League winning team. He's mm-hmm. basically morphing into what he was doing. And he's very good. I was saying to my son yesterday when we were watching the game that, you know, this is why, what we're seeing now is why Manchester City wanted him and agreed to buy him. He's a really, really good player. And again, much maligned. He, I think, did need that season to settle in. I think that Sarri had a role for him and it was a role that he performed. And whereas I think Kovacic didn't need the season because he's a naturally talented player, I think Jorginho needed that season to settle in. And I think what with having that first season, he made a great recovery about, I don't know, 2/3 of the way through the season after all the boo boys had been at him and what have you. He really sort of stepped up his game. And I think people were beginning to appreciate what he could do. And I think he's just taking it onto another level. I think he's a really good player. And I think where you were talking about the rotation before, I think that Jorginho is probably the one player, outfield player, where he's probably the first name on the team sheet, and I don't think he will be rotated. I think Kovacic is more likely to be, but it's a fantastic problem to have. What do you think, Dan?
Well, I mean, if we're talking about putting someone in who can score goals, we know that Conte will occasionally get a little bit of a banger in there. So putting him in for Kovacic, I think, makes more sense than putting Conte in and doing the Conte-Kovacic pivot there in the back too. So, yeah, I think... it's really hard to look at someone. I mean, I think we saw that, maybe the shades of Billy Gilmore, not this season, but in a future, could be that rotational player behind someone like a Jorginho. But Nick, it's not that easy right now because there are things that Jorginho does outside of tripping people or not tripping people that other players on the team can't do.
Right. I mean, we were kind of referencing this, and Frank referenced it during the cup match on Wednesday, that he would have loved to substituted, you know, or rested both of these players because of all the miles they're kind of putting on earlier this season. But I don't know if we have an out-and-out replacement for him. I don't know if we plug and play N'Golo or Billy or you know, potentially Ampadu at some point when he comes back from a failed loan, that, you know, that it's going to be the same. And, you know, I was kind of thinking about, you know, if we absolutely had to, like, who is the best fit for that role? And it might be Reece James, based on what we saw last year. And not saying that I would love to move him from right back, because I think he's going to be a dynamo there someday. But in a pinch, you know, it might be him or it might be Christensen. And it might be someone who has some passing vision, and both of those players do. So it's just, I think it's a testament that he's kind of made that position his own. And he's been able to step up his game. I think he's playing with more confidence and more fight. And he's, you know, he's doing, you know, some of the shithousery things that we need to do. You know, we need a couple of bastards in the team. And I think he might qualify as one of those guys.
A little bite is important in the team. And that's what, obviously, the Chelsea fans, you know, we've come accustomed to, you know, and we talk that we're a short team, but if we have the fight in them, you know, you can be a bit of a bastard and still do it. And that's what we're getting out of them. Speaking of, never mind, I won't use that comparison, but let's just go ahead and mention the VAR controversy real quick and just be done with it for the rest of the episode. On Discord, to Brent saying, any chance the FA comments on the calamity, or we'll just hear the same judgment call BS? Clayton, I thought it was interesting. Frank came out afterwards and said that they had just had a meeting midweek talking about VAR in this sense that it would only change clear and obvious errors. If it takes you that long to look at something, is it really clear and obvious? My guess is probably not. It was super frustrating just to sit there and wait and wait and wait, and then it happened. And you had to slow it down super slow to see. But my problem is, in super slow mode, there's contact, absolutely. But in full speed, is there really enough contact to make him go down or to change his direction? And that's where I think it isn't a penalty, because he was barely clipped. He could have stayed on his feet. It wasn't like we kicked his leg out from under him. That's where I get frustrated with the whole situation.
Yeah, but I mean, that's modern football. You watch modern football and all you is touch somebody and they go down. And we had an example of that last week with Callum, where everybody was saying that's a ridiculous decision. It should have been a penalty because he was pushed in the back. Well, was pushed in the back like that, I wouldn't fall over. And Callum wouldn't in normal life. That's what happens. And the inconsistency with VAR, and you make the point, which is so spot on. If you do something for nigh on 3 minutes, there's no clear and obvious error. And I think that's the frustration. What Mike Reed in this particular, the referee who did it, he was basically re-refereeing the game. And the biggest frustration is that they don't actually go and have a look at the screen. However, what we're doing, this discussion on VAR and this pathetic penalty that we gave away, is masking the fact that we have just bigged up Jorginho, and quite rightly so. But what in hell were they doing? They were fanning about and fanning about, and they were basically the actual passing that they've got is fantastic. But there are places on the pitch where you just put your foot through. And the reason we gave a penalty away is because we were fanning about and we shouldn't have done that. There was 10 minutes to go and just got rid. And I appreciate that we want to retain the ball and that's fantastic, but there has to be circumstances where you just put your foot through it. I don't know what you think, Nick.
Well, and I would say also, if you want to talk about re-refereeing the game, like, Kovacic got whacked right before the ball went to De La Feu. So again, it's this microcosm of we were offsides, but wasn't in a previous match because three passes ago, Mount was offsides. Like, the scope of VAR is just a disaster. And I guess we just have to take the seven-year journey like the NFL did.
Yeah, that's been my point on this show forever, which is, and I think we talked about this at the Cock Tavern, Clayton, like, the NFL took 7 years of instant replay, and I'm hoping it doesn't take this long.
And didn't they stop for a couple of years as well? Did they take it away?
No, they changed the scope of it. They changed the scope of like what could be reviewed or not reviewed. And in the last minute of the game, everything's reviewed because they were, you know, it's like coaches running out of challenges. It was the whole thing. So anyway, not to bore anyone here, but it took legitimately 7 years to get over 90% of the calls right, which is an absurdly long time. But it's 100% what's going to happen here. I mean, VAR is ridiculous. I mean, there are a couple of problems with this. The first is that De La Feu takes two steps after he gets kicked in a normal fashion and then goes down like he had been shot, which to me would tell you that like the trip didn't actually impede him. He just lost the ball. The second piece is that they looked at it for as long as they did and they re-refereed it. And I think the bigger problem that I have with VAR is the same thing, Dan, that we've seen over the last few years. The standard of refereeing has dropped so significantly in the Premier League, and they haven't figured out a way to overcome that. And now VAR is trying to help cover up, in my mind, a lot of really bad refereeing decisions, and that shouldn't be what it is.
Yeah, you know somehow that in the path to hopefully not winning the title, but potentially winning the title, that Liverpool will be the biggest beneficiary of this, and people Weird. Will be able to put the stats together to figure that out. Yeah, VAR, at least this week, is terrible. We hate it. I think the point that Clayton made, and I was making it when I was tweeting from the pod account during the match, is that this was a stupid situation to be in to begin with because we just needed to get the ball out of our own half, and we were trying to pirouette. We were trying to do all these fancy maneuvers, and it would just have been so much better to kick it upfield and reset versus just passing in what is a very, very dangerous area. So I think that's the, again, like, people want to be upset about VAR. That's great. Like, but also don't put yourself in situations to let someone else determine the outcome of the match for you. And I think that's the biggest takeaway that I would have beyond this, Brandon.
Yep. So definitely.
Can I just jump in with something?
Please do.
You're talking about the 7 years it took the NFL. I think what may need to happen is that we may need to have a new generation of referees.
Oh, sure.
Fortunately, bed in, because, you know, whenever you bring something in, like, it's like if you change the Premier League halfway through the season, it's not really fair because the referees have always refereed in a certain way. And now they have to referee a different way. So I think maybe there has to be a whole new generation of these who have only refereed with VAR before it actually works. I mean, obviously, the rules need to be more clearly defined, and I think that take another season or so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, we were at fault for playing in tight spaces in a very dangerous part of the pitch. Sloppy tackle from Jorginho, VAR. Still a disaster in the sense of inconsistency. VAR isn't a disaster if it gets things right, but when they can re-referee a play where Mason Mount is offside three passes before the ball goes in the back of the net, but they can't re-referee this where Mateo Kovacic gets whacked one pass before it goes to De La Feu, again, it's just super frustrating to see. And then the offsides call, was it in the Liverpool match yesterday where it's his shoulder was ahead of someone's knee?
Ridiculous, man.
It's too much at that point. You know, clear and obvious. That's not clear. That sure shit isn't obvious. But this is the situation we live in. So anyways, that wraps up our midfield dynamic duo. Fantastic. Let us know what you think of these two and how they're doing so far this season on social media. But we're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we're going to be talking about the attack. We're going to be talking about the defense, and I think then we've pretty much wrapped up the entire team. So anyways, a huge thank you to the sponsor for financially supporting the show and helping us to do more giveaways for you guys and everything else we're able to do to connect. But we will be right back. All right, so here we go. Skipping to the top end of the pitch, two of Chelsea's three brightest attackers this season have been Tammy Abraham and Christian Pulisic, both finding the back of the net against Watford. Tammy Abraham, let's start there. 9 goals, 2 assists in the Premier League. Coral, at Coral tweeting, Tammy Abraham is the first Chelsea player to score 10 goals across all competitions in the 2019-2020 season. He is crushing it for my fantasy team. And then they go on to say, number 9 curse? Question mark. What number 9 curse? And then they have this interesting graphic here, Clayton. They've got Abraham in full color with our nice little Stamford Bridge print blue kit. And then grayed out behind him, you've got players like, what is that, Kesman, Crespo, Boularus, Torres, Falcao, Morata. And at the center of it all, we've got one of our own, Tammy Abraham. What, we haven't gotten your thoughts on Tammy this season. Is he surprising you? Is he doing exactly what you expect? What's your take on Tammy so far?
I'm completely surprised and pleasantly so. Even after the first couple of games when he scored a couple of goals, I was saying Mount Tomori looked like the real thing. I'm still not sure about Tammy. Well, I am sure about Tammy now. I think he's a super striker, and I think he's a goal poacher, which is what we've missed perhaps since Diego was there. He's just been brilliant. And I think that what I like about him more than anything else is the fact that he doesn't mind missing a few. It doesn't seem to affect him. I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not saying he's missing a lot, but I like the fact that he just gets on with it. The goal that he scored yesterday, I mean, I don't know this as of fact, but that was possibly his first touch. And obviously the ball from Jorginho was sort of unbelievable, but his movement off the ball and his sure touch and great finish, that wasn't easy. You know, that was a really, really clever little dink. As we found out throughout the game, Foster's a very good goalkeeper. He really has surprised me. I don't know whether this is the time to go on to a point which I think caused our last 10 minutes worth of cardiac arrest. Is he's great, but he needs support. We need another striker and we need to be more clinical. But no, answering your question, I think Tammy's fantastic. And I don't actually think that that Frank and the whole coaching setup could possibly have thought that he would have these numbers where we are now.
It's been so impressive. Dan, I think what has probably impressed me the most is, you know, obviously he's becoming a better finisher week in, week out, and I think had gone off the boil a little bit, then obviously had a really good goal yesterday, really class finish off of an immaculate ball that we'll talk about. But I think what has inspired me and impressed me the most is his movement towards goal, the ability he has to run at defenders, to run off the shoulder, to get in behind. Like, I think his movement's better than I thought it would ever be, and that's probably why he's getting the opportunities he's getting.
I can't imagine being a Premier League center back right now and knowing that you have to go up against Chelsea and Tammy Abraham in that match, because he just seems like an ultimate bother, the way he bodies up. I mean, it took Maguire pulling him to the ground to force him off of goal in the beginning of the season, and he is not making life easy for any defender. I think that's a testament to the youth setup and the way that he's been brought up through the ranks of the academy, from some successful loans and unsuccessful loans. But yeah, I think his finishing was never in question. It was, can he do it in the Premier League and at this level? And he is showing that he is very comfortable, very capable, and also scoring a multitude of different goals. Like, this was just a different one from what we've seen previously. And I think that's the most exciting thing about Tammy, Brandon, is that he is continuing to find different ways to score, testing different types of shots, and not getting comfortable within, this is the only way that I can score. But he does need more people coming up like Christian to kind of give him an outlet, which is, you know, why he ended up with an assist today as well.
Right. Yeah, I think he's definitely learning the hold up and link up play. You know, probably getting to learn from Giroud and watch his film is a huge help. And then obviously, you know, I guess you have like Mishi, who's the ultimate poacher. You've got Giroux, who's the ultimate target man. And then you have Tammy, you know, kind of like teeter-tottering in the middle of those two. And it's a really great place for him to be. And the amount of confidence that Lampard has in him. I mean, he gives Tammy chance after chance and all the belief in the world. That has to be so important, not only to any striker, but to a young striker as well. So he's been great. I do want to take this time to pivot off of Tammy. And just real quick, Nick, that ball, that pass from Jorginho, we didn't even talk about it in the first part. Unbelievable. Beat two lines from Watford. Like I said, I genuinely think it surprised Tammy. I think he was surprised that it made it to him. But that awareness and the weight on that ball was world class.
Yeah, it's absolutely exceptional. I was stunned because we've watched him try and try and try and try and try and try and try. And he's never quite got there, Clayton. And that pass, I mean, if that's, I would be shocked if that's not in like a goal move of the season type of thing at the end of the year, because I thought it was just that impressive.
Yeah, no, I mean, first time pass. And of course, it's very reminiscent of the pass that Fabregas played for Costa at Watford. Again, another fast defense splitting. Fantastic. I mean, it's quite interesting. At last season, there was the big thing about Jorginho. He'd never made an assist, and there was a YouTube video of all the balls he'd laid on for all of our strikers that they all missed, and they were decent chances. So he obviously has got that in it, but I mean that pass was beautiful. Dan, have you ever seen anything like it?
Not this season. I mean, I think, you know, Cesc is probably the ultimate in terms of just either no look or crazy assists. In his kind of targeting computer brain that he was able to lay on for our strikers. And yeah, I think Tammy looked just as surprised as anybody else that he had an opportunity to go forward with that goal. And I appreciated that someone has converted one of those excellent chances. And I think hopefully that is just the first of many, which would be the best thing, Brandon.
The best of best things. So the other one, Christian Pulisic, coming at you with a biased perspective here. That's why we brought Clayton in to help even the perspective.
Do you know,
the
I'm really surprised. I'm absolutely staggered you've mentioned it.
Yeah. obviously, coming off his hat-trick hero at a bit of an indifferent display, you know, midweek. But here we are at the weekend. Frank, I think, showing a ton of confidence to put him back in the lineup after pulling him off midweek. Again, not necessarily his fault against Manchester United, but it's just the way everything worked out. But he's back in, and he got a ton more minutes, and he had some good chances, had some poor decisions, but in the end got his goal. 4 goals, 2 assists so far in the Premier League. So he's been involved in 6 goals, which is great. Squawka again saying, Christian Pulisic's goal-scoring record in the league by season. So way back when he started at Dortmund, broke through 2015-2016 season, he only played 9 games and had 2 goals. 16-17, 29 games, 3 goals. 17-18, 32 games, 4 goals. 18-19, last season, 20 games, 4 goals. So far this season, 19-20 season, he's only played 8 games and has 4 goals. Again, that is a great start. Nick, what did you say? 10 goals or something like that would be a great return on Christian in his first season?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, given his record, but also given the fact that he's more of a playmaker, assist maker than he is a goal scorer typically. Like, what that convenient graphic is leaving out is that in each of those seasons, his assists went up, except for last year when he was hurt. So I think Clayton, that's kind of the interesting part about Christian to us is, had it not been for Brandon's goalkeeper curse against us,
stupid,
and Ben Foster having the display of his life, he would have had another perfect hat trick yesterday. He had the header that was going into the top corner, and he had the goalkeeper, Foster stuck out his leg on the left footed finish. But he's clearly playing with confidence, right? I mean, this is it's a good sign for him.
Yeah, it's a great sign. I you know, on the basis that we are not going to get any goals from Kovacic and Jorginho, the fact that the midfield is chipping in, and Mason was very unlucky again. Mm-hmm. Foster made two fantastic saves from Mason. The one where he tipped it on the bar was, I mean, you can't want to hit a ball better than Mason did. He was very unlucky with that. But yeah, I mean, I'm so impressed with Pulisic. His movement's great. And yesterday I was slightly frustrated that he didn't get the ball more. And I don't know whether it's a question of him coming looking for it or being found more, because I think when he has the ball and he's running at defenses, they don't know how to cope with him. And I think it's great. I'm really, really enjoying watching him play. And he's only going to get better once he's got more of an understanding with his teammates. And the sort of the only one downside that I can see so far is the fact that Callum hasn't been playing. And the last two games where he's come on, he's looked very rusty. Now, mm-hmm. It might have been he's coming back from a horrendous injury, but I don't know whether mentally it's doing something to him to see somebody who's playing that well in his position. What I'd love to see, Brandon, it'll be interesting in your views, is basically those two playing at the same time. I know that we had the Man United game, but that wasn't good. But you know, developing that relationship with Tammy in the middle could be interesting.
Right. It comes down to these options. We had a good run from Willian. Seems like he's cooled off a little bit. Callum has had some good and he's had some not so great appearances. That we have a ton of competent. Mount is playing out there or amongst that three as well. So just with the different options and all the games that's coming, things like that, I think that is one of the things that has hindered us a little bit. You know, Emerson and Pulisic, they haven't played together in a long time. They had to quick figure each other out yesterday. But you're right. There's that chemistry that, you know, Christian likes to cut in. If he could find Tammy and keep running and Callum cuts across and different things, like, it can work. It just goes back to, you know, these selection headache for Frank week after week. And usually it's a good headache to have.
Well, can I quickly talk about Christian's movement on the goal yesterday that he did score? Was great. And it was great that Tammy was aware enough to understand where he was going to cut in, Dan, because it's not an easy pass to make. It has to be quick to beat the goalkeeper. And Christian has to realize like the exact right time to go to make it all work together. So it's good that they're kind of getting an understanding together, like Brandon was saying.
Yeah, I definitely am enjoying the way that Christian is moving off the ball. He definitely shows a comfort with Tammy, even with Willian on the pitch together. I think the Emerson one was interesting. Emerson found himself in some really weird places on the pitch yesterday, even more centrally than I think Alonso will find himself at times. So there was some freelancing there, which probably was a little difficult to deal with. But Christian is showing us that, you know, he is going to be very comfortable in this side and in this team. And if he keeps on doing this, Brandon, he's going to be very hard to displace.
That's the goal, is to have 22 guys crushing it, feeling good about themselves.
Starting 11s.
Performing at a high level. Well, all right. So to wrap this one up, going to our defense at this point, Kurt Zouma. It's been an up and a down for him this season. Obviously a terrible start against Man United at the beginning of the season. Came on, gotten a ton of minutes, seems to really cemented himself over Christensen in Lampard's eyes. And what a day for him. Zouma had 5 clearances, which was the most of any player. He had 5 interceptions, which is the most of any player. Interceptions, that's reading the game, being athletic, getting there, beating someone to it. Mm-hmm. That just shows he's not just a big, strong guy that when someone gets close can body off the ball. And then he had 3 blocks. And I think we all remember that huge block in the first half where we were caught out a little bit and he was able to recover with his super long legs and get in front of it. Beyond that, he had 93% passing accuracy, 63 passes, 83 touches, 5 of 8 long balls completed, 6 of 6 aerial duels won, 5 interceptions, 3 block shots, and 5 clearances. I mean, imperious, Nick. Zouma is, I think for me, we always worried about his positioning and his poise on the ball and things like that. They're coming to him quickly this season.
Well, it's clearly, I mean, this is something Clayton, that Lampard's working with him on. The passing is getting better. It still does look a little shaky, especially when compared to how effortless it is for Caio. But, I mean, certainly think about, you know, some of the kind of big bodies that we're going to go up against this year in the Premier League. He was a weapon against Burnley. He was absolutely fantastic yesterday. He started going on these, you know, he does the occasional John Terry run through the midfield that I really appreciate. And I think it helps push Jorginho and Kovacic up when he goes. But yeah, Clayton, I just want to hear your thoughts on Zuma, because I was very impressed yesterday.
He was our outstanding defender yesterday, without a shadow of a doubt. I do find it quite funny watching him, because his passing is so mechanical. It's like he has to be pointing his body in the right direction of where the ball's going. And it's actually very funny. But ultimately, he's in there to defend, and he has got better and better. I think it's quite difficult to remember how good he was when he first came in the side. He really was this powerful, athletic defender. And he got injured at just such an unfortunate time, a bad, bad injury. And he's got back. I mean, we forget he was out on loan for two seasons at Stoke and then at Everton. And Everton were very upset to let him go. And yesterday, and Burnley as well, you're right to mention that, the fact that Burnley play in a certain way, and the fact that he actually was all over Ashley Barnes the whole game, he marshalled him brilliantly. And bottom line is, he's been a real surprise. We talk about being surprised at how good Tammy's been. I'm equally surprised at how Zuma is, especially because he had a bit of a mare in the first game at Man United. His recovery, Dan, is just superb.
Oh, and he's, you know, he occasionally will miss time a jump on corners. He's pretty fine every time else when he's fighting airily, but just when we only give up one corner, that's the best type of defense this team can have against corners, is just not to give them up right now. Ultimately, Zuma made key tackles, great reading of where people were going to be heading. The one near the end of the game, you know, to stop the kind of two-on-one break was fantastic. He really, I think, gets a lot of unnecessary comments in regards to how he looks when he's moving on the ball and when he's passing. I think the mechanical comment is very accurate, but hey, you know, people tend to look at it like he's not comfortable, or that he doesn't necessarily, you know, it's just awkward looking. Same way that Marcus Alonso looks awkward sometimes when he's carrying the ball, because just they're also very tall and big and muscular individuals, and you know what, don't always look comfortable doing things. So I think he was a class above any other defender on the pitch yesterday, and probably one of our best two to three players out of everyone.
Hey, don't forget about Tomori, guys. All right.
Oh, we won't.
I mean, talk about a partnership. It was always, who's going to partner Rudiger? It's November 3rd. There is no Rudiger, sadly. Like, he's not an option. So Frank, rightly so, has to figure out the next combo. And right now, our starting center back pairing is Fikayo Tomori and Kurt Happy Zuma. That's the world we live in. And it's a great world we live in. Nick, Statman Nick, I'll let you even run through fixed stats.
Statman Nick.
From this match.
That's where I'm going. 90 minutes played, 90% pass accuracy, 95 touches, 83 passes, 5 duels won, 4 clearances, 4 aerial duels won, 2 tackles won, or 2 aerial duels won, 1 long ball completed. So not a bad day at the office for Fick. I mean, he clearly has Lampard's confidence. Clayton, this is a guy who, you know, I think everybody's been over the moon about. He's had a couple of scarier passing moments over the last couple of weeks, but I think it's kind of cleared that up a little bit in his game. Just ridiculously impressed with a young guy coming in and just kind of cementing his place ahead of some more experienced talent.
Completely. I don't think he's eradicated that from his game. He gave the ball away a couple of times yesterday. But yeah, he's young. You forget how young he is. And he has been impressive. And, you know, everybody's been going on about Mason Mount and what have you, but the player of the year at Derby last year was Fikayo, not Mason. And he just looks to the manner born. I've made this point on before, but when these guys are coming into our team, the young guys, they don't look out of place. They look like they belong, and there's no awkwardness. And Tomori is part of that setup. And I think, and you guys have mentioned it as well, the fact that they all played in the same youth team, when they've got two or three guys around them that they know and they play with, they belong. That, you know, the youth team were winners. And these guys play like winners. They play with confidence. They play like they expect to win. They're all unbelievably comfortable on the ball. And Brandon, I think that the fact that they've got Jody Morris there and Joe Edwards and the guys that they've grown up with, these guys know them inside out. And I think that's just such, you know, it's such a major benefit.
Well, one thing I don't think we've talked a lot about, or maybe just hasn't been mentioned much, is that these guys will go to war for each other because they've been through so much together. I think sometimes people forget, when you kind of buy all these players who don't know each other and put them in, at the end of the day, they're professionals and they're really out there for themselves. Now, teamwork helps them, right? But these guys will go so much further for these guys that they've been playing with since they were 6, 7, 8 years old, because that is the environment they've been in. As you talk about Joe Edwards bringing them through, with Jody Morris bringing them through, that is the environment they've been in. And since those guys have achieved everything together, they just have a stronger bond, and that's the way it is. And so, you know, look, we posted the picture on our Instagram and Twitter from Chris Axon, who had a brilliant shot of the goal celebration and the camaraderie in this team right now. Team spirit is an all-time high. And I tell you what, it is a huge credit, because these boys will play for the badge and for each other before they play for themselves. And the team, the club, the managers, and the fans are all being rewarded for that. We are the beneficiaries of that. And it is fantastic for us to see. So with that being said, Dan of the Match poll, here it is. I retweeted it, tried to get you a little bit more visibility, Dan, after last week's show.
You don't want to talk about the Kepa save from the Ben Foster header attempt?
No, yeah. I don't, because I'm pissed that was even a thing. But since you bring it up,
goalkeeper crying. This is gonna be awful. Hey,
all I'm gonna say is classic goalkeeper: show up when no one else does, right? Doing his job. 90th minute, making a big save. Clayton, am I right? I mean, come on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm absolutely over the moon for Kepa, because I'm getting really, really hacked off with all the negative crap that surrounded him this season. You know, he should have done this and he should have done that. No, he's good, and he's going to get better. And I don't think he started the season off particularly well. I'm just really delighted. I tweeted this on during the week, but I was so delighted that he wasn't in goal on Wednesday night, because he would have basically been given grief for the Rashford free kick, which two goalkeepers on a stepladder would have had trouble keeping out. Yeah, I was really, really pleased for him. Really pleased.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the grief is definitely pointed in the wrong direction there with him, because it's been a transition completely, pretty much a completely new back line for him. You know, new players coming in. It's a different world this season, without a doubt. But if Ben Foster would have scored, I swear, I would have... It would have been end of days at that point. That, I mean, as if he didn't already have the day of his life, to just add that would have been ridiculous. But Kepa, doing Kepa things.
He went up, Ben Foster, as the final whistle went, which was immediately after that chance went wide, Ben Foster went over and hugged Kepa right after Dave did. And I was like, man, he probably was so sure that was going in, and like, just wanted to pay respect, because
game, respect, game.
Yeah, Ben Foster had the day of his life, and then almost like capped it with the most ridiculous moment. And his post match interview was even like, you know, I think we started pretty poorly, and I was like, yeah, no shit, you guys were under the cosh forever. We dominated that game. It was ridiculous. But yeah, really great moment from Kepa. I think it's those kind of moments. I think we remember a former snakeish goalkeeper making a save against Sunderland that kept our winning streak alive back in Conte's first season. And you could tell that kind of moment, Clayton, can really make a goalkeeper, you know, stand out within a team to, you know, to have that kind of game saving moment. So I'm really pleased for him.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a great thing that he made the save, roared after making the save, and then the final whistle went, roared again. And yeah, I mean, the photograph of Ben Foster hugging Kepa's actually made it on the back pages of a couple of newspapers here. It was a lovely moment, but it's a goalkeepers' union. You know, you might, I mean, the fact is that Ben Foster had one of those games, and I sort of use this description that if you drive a bus at him, he'll push it around the post. You know, it's one of those games where nothing's going to go in. The save from Pulisic was just bonkers. It was just ridiculous. I'm just really pleased for Kepa because, as I say, you know, he's had so much bad publicity, and that will just remind people of what we've got.
Yes, we have a gem in Kepa. And he's a great guy. All right, so back to Dan of the Match. As we talk about the heroics of Kepa, Dan, how did you he's not in here.
He's not, no. Zuma, Pulisic, Jorginho, Kovacic, no surprise, with almost 50% of the vote, Kovacic as man of the match, Dan of the Match. So, yeah.
All right, well, you quickly swept that under the rug. So we'll move on to the Premier League table as we wrap this up. As it stands, I'm looking at the clock, 42nd minute, Everton 0, Tottenham 0. So the table at this point in time is Liverpool on top with 31 points, Man City second with 25, Leicester City winning this morning, going back up into third, which we held for a short time, on 23 points, Chelsea on 23 points in fourth, Arsenal dropping points at Wolves in fifth on 17. Some notable mentions. Sheffield United, sixth place, 16 points. Bournemouth, relegation battlers last season, seventh place, 16 points. Brighton, relegation battlers, 15 points in eighth. Palace, ninth. United, 10th. Wolves, 11. West Ham, 12. Spurs, 13th. But they could jump up to the top 10 if they win this one. Burnley 14th, Newcastle 15th, Villa 16th, Everton 17th, Southampton 18th, Norwich 19th, Watford 20th. What a silly table. I believe, Dan, you said the table doesn't mean anything until January. We're getting there. It's starting to shake out a little bit.
For United and Tottenham, who are closer to Watford than they are to us on the table, not a good look for some teams that we would typically consider top six.
Yeah,
we had a moment yesterday, Brandon, that right before we started, Liverpool were losing, City had just gone ahead, which, you know, I think, you know, say what you want, I mean, they're probably still the biggest threat to Liverpool, and Arsenal had just drawn to Wolves, and it was like the perfect storm for us to just go take points and keep moving. Arsenal dropping points was the huge story of yesterday because now we're 6 points clear of them in fourth, and you know, they're just a shambles right now. So I think it's been a really good weekend for us. Hopefully Everton and Spurs can draw.
Yeah, obviously super disappointing to see Liverpool get the late ridiculousness that they did. But you know, that's really not a fight for us at this point. It's good to see we are level with Leicester and right behind City. And they're starting to create a gap between, you know, fourth and fifth, sixth, seventh. So that's where we stand.
But here's the crazy thing. Next weekend, Liverpool City take on each other. We take on Palace. I mean, there's a wonderful world where we can, you know, be pushing potentially to be a top two side in the very short future. So I mean, just things to keep in mind. Like, you know, that we are not out of the realm of talking about competing for it. I think people don't want to say it because they want to jinx it or they want, you know, what kind of temper expectations. But, like, the feel-good energy of this side, like, crazier things have happened, Clayton, and I don't rule that out in the realm of possibility.
I'm loving your optimism.
Yeah.
I just basically think that we are overachieving this season, and I think we are doing brilliantly. I don't think any of us on this pod, any of your listeners, in their wildest dreams would have thought that after 11 games, we'd be 6 points clear in fourth place. I've always looked at this season as transitional. I think anything we get out of this season is a bonus. My hope for this season is by the end of the season, we would have four homegrown players as first team players. And that's going to happen. And it might be five. It might be six. I don't know. But I'm not looking above in that table. I'm really not. I'm just enjoying the ride. I really am.
Absolutely. And a ride. It has been so much fun this season. Clayton, thank you. Thank you for
coming back.
And joining us. It's always a pleasure. To our listeners, thank you so much for being with us, hanging out with us in this episode. We've loved it. Hope you've enjoyed it as well. Interact with us, emails, social media, get in touch with us about this episode. Quick turnaround this week with Midweek Champions League. We will be back for that one. But until next time, Chelsea fans, you know what to do. Keep the blue flag flying high.